And it may not be clear as the morning yet. It may not be white as the restless sea, but love given freely becomes what it ought to be.
Some Things Shouldn't Be a Chore by Sci-Fi Girl 47, read by Hana Nobira. Chapter 3.
High-class cocktail parties and meet-and-greets made Tony pray for some sort of disaster. Not a big one, mind you. Nothing that would result in injury or death to some innocent civilians, but damn, that'd be nice. Like a Doombot attack, or that giant squid that Namor lost control of that one time. That was more hilarious than dangerous. Man, watching Thor try to have a conversation with a giant squid was one of the most bizarre experiences of his life, and that was saying something. Now some bubble-headed blonde was yapping away in Tony's ear, her arms wrapped around his arm, her breasts squished up against his side, and yeah, those weren't real. And he was laughing at all the right places, his smile wide and bright and ever so charming, saying the right things and throwing out just the right amount of snark for the ring of socialites and politicians and VIPs that were hovering around. Booze was flowing, and the outfits were stunning, and the photographers were everywhere, and Tony was designing a new layer of adaptive circuitry in his head because he could do this in his sleep. Judging by the times he'd kinda sorta woken up somewhere other than his bedroom, confused and disoriented, he probably had. Still, he could keep this up for as long as he needed to. Despite the lack of sleep, despite the lack of proper food, and a little too much alcohol. And the woman who had as many arms as Namor's pet squid and was way, way grabbier with him. Just another depressing night in the life of Tony Stark, genius billionaire playboy philanthropist. Greatest technical mind of his generation, he was the life of the party, the tabloid darling of New York, the terror of Wall Street, and the scourge of villains everywhere injustice could be found. Of course, the real Tony Stark just wanted to go home and play with his toaster. Tony? Even through the babble of voices, a little too loud and a little too brittle, Steve's quiet voice brought his head around. "Hey, Steve," he said, giving the blonde a wide smile. And damn, did Captain America look good in a suit. He sensed Pepper's fine and delicate hand in the new fashion statement, and he made a note to send her a fruit basket. Or, since fruit was boring, a fruit basket full of shoes. A shoe basket. That'd work out well. "What's a shoe basket?" Steve asked, eyebrows furrowed. And Tony shook his head. "Never mind," he said. "What can we do for you, Steve? Have you met everyone? Everyone? Steve Rogers. Steve? Everyone." He waved a hand back and forth to laughter and smiles from all concerned. "Well, everyone but Steve." Steve inclined his head at the group. "Hello," he said with a faint smile. "I'm sorry. I need to borrow Tony for a few minutes." Tony patted his human squid's hand and managed to wriggle free from her clutching fingers. "Duty calls. Thank you all. I must fly." Perhaps in the literal sense. With one last charming grin and a mock salute, he fell into step with Steve. "What's up?" he asked, his attention on Steve, even though he nodded and smiled at various acquaintances as they passed through the crowd. "Assembling?" And he hoped against hope, that he didn't sound eager, because that would be bad. "My watch isn't working," Steve said, and Tony blinked. "What? Oh, oh!" Tony grinned at him. "You want me to take a look at it?" "Do you mind?" Steve asked, the apology clear in his voice, and Tony clapped him on the back. "No, let's see." He narrowed his eyes, trying to remember the layout of this place. It had been a while since he'd been here. Come on, I think I remember a library down this hall. And with this crowd, that's not getting used. Tony, be nice. But Steve's lips were twitching. I am always nice. I am known for being nice. It's a known Stark characteristic. People have written odes to my propensity for... Okay, okay. Stop before you hurt yourself, Steve said. And he was laughing, eyes dancing. Tony was right about the location of the library and its current lack of popularity. He pulled a chair up to a small table, flicking on the lamp and fumbling in a hidden jacket pocket for a tiny toolkit. Let's see what's going on here, he said, unwrapping the tools. The set was of his own design. Light, almost indestructible, useful for everything from picking a lock to disarming a bomb. He was a goddamn Avenger, after all. Steve dropped the watch on the table within Tony's reach and took a seat next to him on a nearby love seat. It was ridiculously undersized for his solid form, and Tony spared him a grin before turning his attention to the timepiece. Did it slow down or just stop? You haven't been overwinding it, have you? Come on, Tony. I've had that watch for years. I know how much it needs to be wound. He watched Tony, curiosity plain on his face. He seemed to enjoy watching Tony work, as odd as that was. Tony agreed, opening up the delicate mechanism. If you'd just get a digital watch, we could avoid this. Things shouldn't be dispensable, Steve said. This is still good. As long as you can fix it? Of course I can fix it, Tony said, a little insulted. It's easy to fix. And even if it wasn't, he'd still manage it, because Steve had asked him to do it. Steve leaned an elbow on the armrest, his eyes on a bowl of fruit next to Tony. Do you suppose I can eat one of those pears? Tony glanced up. Sure, he said, snagging one and tossing it to Steve. I doubt they remember it's in here. Probably would just rot if you didn't. Steve sighed. Your friends waste a lot of food, he said. And it sounded more sad than judgmental. They're not my friends, Tony said. Maybe Fury's friends? He's the one who said we had to come. He studied the gears with a practiced eye. Yeah, this was not a naturally occurring problem. What did you do? Take a butter knife to this thing? Steve paused, pocket knife hovering over the pear, then sighed. One of those little oyster forks, he admitted. Why? Shaking his head, Tony went about repairing the damage, which was mostly just a couple of gears and springs out of place. Steve's cheeks were pink. I needed some excuse to pull you away from everyone, he pointed out. Tony gave a bark of laughter. No, you don't, Cap. You can just say, hey, Stark, come over here. And yeah, I'm going to go over there, Tony said, grinning. After all, you're my favorite person here. He glanced up in time to see Steve's broad, pleased grin. Idiot, don't smash up your meager possession to get my attention. Steve's face was distinctly red. I knew you could fix it. He started slicing into the pear. Want a piece? Yeah, sure. Tony hummed under his breath as he worked on the repairs, and Steve placed a slice of the pear next to him. He picked it up and popped it in his mouth, and it was cool and crisp and sweet. He chewed and swallowed, reaching for the next piece, knowing it was going to be there without having to look up. They finished the first pear, and Tony tossed Steve a second one. It didn't take him long to fix the wristwatch, but he took his time, checking everything he could, making mental notes about oil and replacement gears and better springs that he could install once they got home. For now, though, he closed it up and munched his way through the most recent slice of pear. Turning, he held it out to Steve. Almost as good as new. Steve grinned at him. Thanks. He disposed of the last piece of the pear's core in a nearby trash can and went to place the final slice on the table next to Tony. Tony reached for it. Give it here. And Steve paused. You don't like having things handed to you, not... He waved a hand at the room. Here.
Tony froze. After a long, still moment, he reached out and took the slice from Steve's fingers. "It's fine. If it's you," he said, and popped the pear in his mouth before he could say anything else stupid. Like, anything. At all. "Oh, okay," Steve said, and he wiped his knife off on a handkerchief before folding it and putting it away. "Thanks, Tony." "Hmm." Tony chewed and swallowed. "Why the subterfuge?" he asked. "You were getting that weird note in your laughter again," Steve said, his voice soft. He bent his head down, focusing on refastening his watch band. "I know you hate these things." "So do you," Tony pointed out. "And I'm better at faking it, so hey, party time." He raised a single index finger and rotated it in the universal symbol for whee. Steve glanced up. "But you hate them," he said, lips kicking up on one side in an adorable, lopsided smile. "And I hate how you get at them." Tony focused on packing up his tools. "Drunk?" he said, trying for humor, and failing miserably. "No. Well, yes. I don't like that either. It's dangerous and it's not good for you. But that's another thing." Steve was still playing with the watch band. "You've got this mask you wear at these things." "People expect a certain je ne sais quoi from Tony Stark," Tony said with a shrug. "Easier to give them what they want." He'd memorized this years ago, partially Howard and partially the confident rich boys at his boarding schools, and mostly Tony, drunk and faking it. Faking it until he found a groove that he could ride until the whole mess was over. Sometimes, when he was younger, he might have enjoyed it. Honestly, he no longer remembered. But Steve was looking at him with that pinched look on his face, and Tony gave him a smile. "Come on, Cap. Fury needs someone to glad hand. Banner or Barton would be a disaster. Natasha would start killing people just to alleviate the boredom. Thor would have great fun. But the average person off the street can't handle his sheer awesome. So it's you or me, and you hate these things." Tony gave him a smile. "I'm more used to being a tabloid spectacle than you. Let the professional trained dancing bear take one for the team." Steve chuckled, and Tony glanced at him. "I used to draw myself as a dancing monkey," Steve explained, "in my USO days." "Cap, that is just poor self-esteem. You are clearly at least a dancing gorilla. Or orangutan." "Why is it that people think you're charming again?" "It's my secret mutant power. Charisma." Tony wiggled his eyebrows in Steve's direction. "Come on, Cap. One more turn around the dance floor and you're out of here." "You mean we?" "Nah, I gotta stick around and meet and greet for a few hours more. Or Fury'll get that sad look that most people mistake for rage. Homicidal rage." "Tony." "Enough, Cap." Tony gave a grin. "Let me throw myself on this grenade for the team. It's the least I can do." "Seems to me it's something you do all the time," Steve said, his voice very soft. "I am noble in the extreme." Tony blew Steve a kiss. "I think we've stalled long enough." Straightening his jacket, he rolled his shoulders, tucked his chin up, and slapped on a wicked smile. "Showtime." His phone rang, and he nearly collapsed with relief. "Oh, thank fucking God," he said, pulling it out. "Please tell me there's some sort of an emergency happening here. Please. Anything. I'll even go help Richards at this point, and I hate that guy. I really..." The roar of noise caused him to hold his phone at arm's length, blinking. He stared at it for a moment. "It's for you," he said, handing it to Steve, who bobbled it, but took it, because he was incapable of smacking it to the ground the way he should have. "Steve Rogers," he said. And he drew up straight, the way he always did, standing at attention as if the person on the other end of the call could see him. And he was so adorable, Tony just wanted to skip around him throwing rose petals. And that wasn't weird or anything. What the hell, Brain? Steve raised an eyebrow at him. "Roses are expensive. Don't waste them just to make a fool of me," he said, rolling his eyes. "Yeah, to make a fool of you," Tony agreed with a tight smile. "That's totally what I was going for." Luckily, Steve was ignoring him again, focusing on the phone call. "I see. Yes, I understand. All right. We'll be home in 10 minutes. Thank you. Goodbye." He ended the call and handed Tony the phone back. Tony had heard "home in 10 minutes" and was doing a very dignified and subdued victory dance. "Someday," Steve said, laughing, "I will figure out how to videotape these things and upload them to the internet." "You know how. You're just too nice to do it," Tony said, with a little hip swivel. "Let's blow this popsicle stand." "Don't you want to know why we're going home?" "Not at all. Don't care. Avengers business. Thor broke a head of state. Clint traumatized another pizza parlor. Bruce let Strange into my pool again. Goddamn magic is not acceptable in the pool. I can only take so much when I'm next to Naked. There are limits. Right now, I don't care. Any excuse will do." Coulson said that a bunch of robot hockey pucks just ate the rugs in the front parlor, one of Thor's capes, half of his confidential files for the last month, and one of Natasha's socks. Natasha is threatening to slit them all open until she finds the perpetrator. Tony paused. "So, is it a good time to tell you that I might have upgraded the Roombas a little more?" "Yeah, we figured that out." "So, do you want to tell us how this happened?" Steve asked, looking around the Avengers' living quarters. Tony tucked his hands in his pockets and rocked back and forth on his heels. "Some things," he said, nodding sagely, "defy explanation." "Does that ever hold up?" Steve asked. "In front of Congress or in court?" Tony grinned. "Either way, the answer is no. Mostly, it's a stalling tactic, so I can figure out something better to say." "What exactly did you do?" Bruce asked, picking his way through the swarming masses of Roombas. Luckily, he seemed kind of amused. "Really, it's a good concept, the whole robotic vacuum cleaner thing," Tony said, eager now, "because it worked. All of it worked. They'd gone looking for messes. What good little Roombas. They'd gotten bored in the workshop and gone looking for messes. Dummy must have let them on the lift. They'd have a chat about that later. But there's a lot of wasted space in the design as it stands. So I jacked up the chassis a little, replaced the wheels with a more efficient rotation system, cut myself some space between the motor system and the charging layout, ditched the battery, of course. Gotta go smaller and longer lasting on that. Not commercially viable, but these are for personal use. I'm not putting up with this 2 hours before it needs charging bullshit. And use the extra space to enlarge the dirt storage unit, the suction system, basic visual and auditory input sensors, and to create an uplink system between them and Jarvis and amongst themselves." Steve and Bruce were staring at him. Steve with a certain degree of amused worry, and Bruce with curiosity. "So you're saying you created a hive mind?" Bruce asked. "Kinda. I didn't have time to create a full AI for them, so I just tapped them into the house, so they get their instructions and input from Jarvis. He's kind of the alpha male in this little pack. So outside the tower, they'd be forced to feed off each other's data, and that won't go so well." "Kinda dumb," Bruce said, sidestepping a swift-moving Roomba. "Let's just say they're kind of a pack of bros standing around going, 'What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I'll do whatever you want to do.' 'Yeah, but what do you want to do?'" Tony explained. "Not really Mensa material. I'm working on it."
"So you're the one controlling them, Jarvis?" Steve asked.
"Less controlling and more desperately playing shepherd," Jarvis said, sounding tired.
"How's that working?"
"Peachy," Jarvis said, so dry that Tony could almost see the tumbleweeds rolling by.
peachy keen? Steve asked, grinning.
We haven't reached quite that level, sir. You shall be the first to know if it comes to that.
Stark! Coulson came stomping through, and the Roombas were smart enough to get the hell out of his way.
What the hell are these things?
Dummy wanted a pet, Tony said, hands in his pants pockets, grinning like a maniac.
I couldn't choose just one.
How many of these things are there? Coulson said, studiously ignoring the one that rolled up and was attempting to clean his shoe. To an untrained observer, it kind of looked like the thing was humping his leg. Tony wondered if that behavior could be encouraged. Maybe not. Coulson was usually armed, and he had a hair trigger when he was in a mood, which was almost all the time when he was around Tony.
He's got a point, Tony, Steve said, sounding concerned. I thought there were 25 of them. This seems a lot more than 25.
Well, I bought 50.
This seems like a lot more than 50, Steve said, choosing his words carefully.
87 at last count, Jarvis said, sounding tired.
Oh, hey, it worked! Tony gave a fist pump. Damn, I'm good. High five, he said to Bruce, who arched an eyebrow but held up a hand for Tony to slap. Science, bitches!
What worked, Stark?
Coulson said, rubbing a hand over his face.
Well, I was worried about if they got damaged, you know. There's a lot of stairs around here, and some of our experiments can be really dangerous. Dummy doesn't always watch where he's going, and, you know, supervillain attacks sometimes. So I took the first few, cranked up the AI by a couple of degrees, gave them a connection to the fabrication units, and programmed them how to, well, fix themselves.
Repair units? Bruce said. I don't think...
And it looks like they just started reproducing instead, Tony mused. Maybe if there aren't any damaged ones, they think that's what they're supposed to do. I mean, the fabrication units can do the basic assembly, not the high-level stuff, but they work with the armor. So, yeah, putting together some Roombas wouldn't be so bad. They're certainly capable of producing the parts. But the circuitry... I don't know how well that would go without human intervention.
I put a stop to it once I realized that they're not as responsive as the ones you produced, sir, Jarvis said. One of their first attempts is there. Yes, the one that is running into the wall.
Everyone paused to watch the Roomba whir across the floor. It hit the wall, spun in a circle, and returned exactly the way it came. It hit the opposite wall. It spun. For a few minutes, they all watched it methodically repeat the exact same path. Then Jarvis sighed.
Not quite up to snuff.
Aw, special Roomba, Tony said, reaching down to pick it up. It's okay, baby. We'll fix you.
It whirred, wheels spinning in midair.
Yeah, you're kind of helpless up here. It's fine. It's...
He paused, a thought sliding through his mind. He blinked.
That could work.
Why does it say Mr. Fantastic on that? Steve said, leaning over Tony's shoulder. Tony snapped back from his thoughts, looking down at the black Sharpie labeling his awkward, dumb Roomba.
Because Barton hates Richards more than me, and that takes effort, Tony said.
Barton, he yelled. Are you naming my Roombas?
What?
Clint stuck his head out from the lounge.
What the hell is your problem, Stark?
Whatever Tony's problem had been, he promptly forgot it. It probably had something to do with Clint's outfit. The skin-tight, faded black jeans, the heavy boots, and the tight white t-shirt with the sleeves ripped off were common enough on Hawkeye's solid frame. The bright pink ruffled apron with balloon patches on the front was a little more unusual.
See, Steve, this is the sort of thing that belongs on the internet, Tony explained. You may use my phone.
Barton folded his hands behind his head, his bare arms flexing with the movement, crossing his ankles and giving it a little attitude. "Feel free," he said with a smirk. "I make this look good."
"He kind of does," Bruce said, and got himself an eye wiggle for his trouble.
"You are shameless, Barton. Utterly shameless. I like that about you," Tony said, lifting the Roomba to brace on his shoulder.
"Stop naming my Roombas."
"You wouldn't let me name the toaster."
"It's on the agenda," Steve said, and he was smiling down at the Roombas that were swirling around his feet, chittering because he had left footprints on their nice, neat floor, and he was an enemy of the Roomba state. "In fact, it feels like family meeting time, you know, now."
"Where's Thor and Natasha?" he asked Clint.
"Thor!" Clint yelled. "Aye, my brother in arms!" There was a couple of thumps, and the sound of something breaking. Probably something expensive. Tony wondered if his insurance policy covered act of demigod. And then Thor appeared, standing on an ironing board that was balanced on top of, like, 10 Roombas. Thor gave them a huge grin, fists on his hips, heroic pose solidly in place, despite the fact that his pale gray apron with yellow bubbles up the front clashed with his cape. Coulson smacked Barton on the back of the head, making him laugh. "Why do I get blamed for everything?" he said, clearly knowing he deserved it.
"This chariot is worthy of the almighty Thor," Thor boomed. "Not yet as pleasing as that drawn by Tangrnisir and Tangrnjostr, but still most worthy."
Natasha took a picture, and he gave her a pleased nod, accepting that as his due.
"How is he steering that?" Steve asked. Natasha was padding lightly out in Thor's wake with a camera at the ready. "Toss potting soil in the direction you want to go, and they head right for it," Natasha explained, as if that hadn't been her idea. And Tony knew it had been. He just knew. He just knew that she was waiting for everyone to be distracted. Then she'd scatter the stuff in all directions just for the joy of watching the Roombas try to go haywire.
"If you break my Roombas, Thor, I am going to be very displeased," Tony said, despite the fact that, yeah, this was something he should have thought of. Not with an ironing board, of course. That was just undignified. He frowned. "Wait, I own an ironing board?"
"It's Coulson's," Natasha said.
"You own an ironing board?"
Tony asked Coulson.
"Not anymore," the agent said on a sigh.
"Yeah, family meeting time," Steve said. And Tony resisted the urge to scream.
Despite the fact that this was only their second family meeting, and yes, Tony was mentally making finger quotes around those words, there were already rules. He blamed Steve. The first rule, as it turns out, was that Tony was not allowed to get drunk during family meetings. Tony tried to argue that this was unfair, because the family meeting would be much more tolerable if he was too drunk to contribute to or remember it. Steve had just given him a, "I am certain that you're joking, because what you are saying is hurtful, and I am going to ignore it," look, and taken away his bottle of brandy. The second rule, close on the heels of the first, was that being at the family meeting took priority over everything else. There had been a little discussion about that, because Clint would play Angry Birds with the sound on during Fury debriefings, and Thor generally went a little stir-crazy if he didn't have something to do with his hands, and Bruce had calculations that he was running that really wouldn't take much of his attention at all. But Coulson had closed his file folders, stacked them neatly, recapped his pen, and folded his hands, focusing on Steve, and everyone else had fallen into line. Except Tony. "I am doing this under duress," he said, his grease-stained fingers already playing with the innards of Mr. Fantastic the Roomba. "I've redesigned circuitry during congressional hearings. So come on, I can do this, really. Just talk. I promise. I am all over this family meeting thing. I just need to..."
He shoved a screwdriver in his mouth and continued talking around it, his teeth holding it in place.
Finish this.
Steve reached over and took the screwdriver out of his mouth. Tony. Tony tipped his head in Steve's direction, eyes narrowed beneath lowered brows. Steve met the look without flinching. Fine, Tony said, leaning back and wiping his hands on a napkin. Fine. Meeting. Wonderful. What are we meeting about? Can we discuss the fact that we had to lock the kitchen door to keep your mob of little robots from overwhelming us? Natasha said. No, he said. Look, okay, I wasn't expecting this. It's fine. Sometimes great inventions have a little, well, bump in the road. Doesn't mean the invention itself is a failure. It just needs a little work. He tipped the chair and balanced on the back legs. I'll get them back down to the workshop and work on the AI. Jarvis has changed the parameters of their programming so that they won't build anymore, and they'll stay in assigned areas. I've got some more ideas. It'll be fine. But at some point, we may be able to use them to cover the whole tower. Why? Coulson started, and Tony cut him off. Look, with upgraded audio and visual components, enhanced AI, maybe some other tricks built in, they can be used as part of the security system. It'll be fine, really. I'm done discussing it. My tower, my Roombas. Hush now, everyone. There was a beat of silence, and Tony thought it might have worked. And then Clint started laughing. Yeah, no, he said, grinning. Tony, that's just stupid. And yet, that's what we're going with. Steve, what's next? Tony let the chair fall forward with a clatter, his arms falling to the tabletop. Steve looked like he was going to say something, but his eyes flicked down to where Tony's hand was resting on top of the Roomba. Keep them under control, okay? You won't even know they're here, Tony said, arching his eyebrows. But some tension that he hadn't even been aware of leaked out of his shoulders, his fingers smoothing over the upgraded casing of the little robot Puck. He gave it a little pat. Why does Tony get away with this stuff? Clint asked. Because he owns the property, the bed you're sleeping in, and the bow you're coveting, Natasha said, eyebrow arching. Oh, yeah, Clint grinned. In that case, viva la Roombas. I want to name them. No, Tony said. Keep your damn Sharpie to yourself, Barton. A sentiment that has been repeated over and over through the years, Coulson said. Okay, Steve said, before the whole thing could devolve into a series of double entendres, because that happened a lot around this group. Tony was gleeful about encouraging it, and Barton had a dirty mouth, and Coulson was the perfect straight man, and Steve blushed bright red at anything that even smacked of a dick joke, and Thor just loved, loved, loved dick jokes and skipped the entendres altogether. Of course, if Natasha felt like playing, they would all end up blushing and stammering. Except for Bruce, who could keep a zen calm in the face of anything. Tony tried to pay attention for a couple of seconds, and they were discussing the damn chore chart. So he went back to considering just how to most effectively eliminate the issues with the Roomba's movements. Right now, the rotation system would allow them access to their work, but if he wanted this to be effective, really effective, he needed to move beyond that. To find a way, there was always a way. The circuits and the batteries and physical limitations, and there was nothing. The toaster bumped into his arm, and he snapped upright. Steve was grinning at him, eyes warm and far too knowing, and Tony scrunched his nose in a faint apology. His brain seldom stayed in one place for long, no matter how much he tried to focus. Luckily, no one else seemed to have noticed. And when Tony looked over Steve's shoulder, he realized that the goddamn chart had gained a bunch of new tasks, and somehow his name was assigned to some of them. Hey, he started. That's what happens when you're not paying attention, Steve said in an undertone, and Tony could only gape at him. Did you just use your powers for evil? He asked. The tower gets clean, the team is happy, everyone feels appreciated. Seems like good old American righteousness to me, Steve said, grinning. And there's that snark, that dry, warm sense of humor that slipped by almost everyone, and Tony loved. Evil, Tony said. And yeah, he was a kinky bastard, because that was a lovely thought. Whatever gets you to load the dishwasher, Tony, Steve said, and Tony was laughing at his faint smile, laughing because why the hell not? Because he actually felt like laughing. Listen, Clint was saying, and his arms were crossed, his chin at an obstinate angle. I want to name the toaster. It likes me best. No one in this room believes that you have pure intentions here, Bruce said. And I'm not calling the toaster Sweetums. Snuggle Bunny? Clint asked. Natasha suggested something in Russian, and Clint glanced at her. Didn't you used to call me that? He asked. Yeah, but the toaster's more reliable, and provides a hot breakfast on occasion. That is just harsh, Natasha. Let's call the toaster Tosh. I prefer a name fit for such a fiery warrior, Thor said, stroking his chin. In retrospect, fair widow, Tosh may be appropriate. Not happening, she said. And it's easier to take you seriously when you're not wearing that ludicrous apron. It was a gift from Lady Darcy, Thor said, arranging the apron around him with a smile. I think it most becoming. I hate everyone, Tony said, and Steve was laughing as he returned the marker to the chart's tray and crossed the room to stand behind Tony's chair and lean over to hug him from behind. Tony sighed, but he just let it happen, mostly because Steve had already checked it off the list, and he wasn't about to make a liar out of Steve at this point. Also, Steve smelled good. Thanks, Steve said. And Tony wondered if blunt force trauma to the skull would solve his problems. Probably not. Coulson stood up, holding up a hand. The toaster's name is Calcifer, he said, his tone brooking no argument. Stark, go handle the goddamn Roombas. And everyone else, assume that Stark is not going to be able to handle his damn Roombas. Pick it up, nail it down, lock the doors. Are we understood? A beat of silence, and everyone murmured agreement. Why Calcifer? Steve asked. Because Coulson's a nerd, Clint said, standing. Come on, Cap. We'll pop Howl's Moving Castle onto the main screen while we Roomba-proof the rec room.